Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, happy Friday, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Well, you know what Friday is? Friday is Dr. Judy Jasik Day, where we talk about the more difficult things in pet health. Dr. Jasik, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm doing good, but I'm sitting here thinking, wait, it's not Friday, it's Thursday. Oh, that's when Dee Dee posts the podcast.
That's right.
Sometimes I'm a little slow. Like, man, it's Thursday, Dee Dee. What are you talking about?
You're like trying not to push it. Don't push it. Don't push it, right? Well, I wanted to just read a couple of reviews that we have on the podcast. This one came in from Tam, and maybe it's Tamini on the 14th. And she said, I love this show. I love that they talk all things health and wellness. I love that they remind people that animal health is a perfect example of how humans should look at their own health. Animal vaccines work the same way human vaccines work. Animal virus work the same all viruses work. Humans, a delusional thinking that their own health isn't affected in the exact same way as their pets. You can't eat crap and keep taking a jab of vaccine and not think it won't affect your health. Friends don't let friends feed kibble, and they don't allow their friends to take the jab.
Ooh. Right. Exactly. You know, along those lines is interesting, as one of my employees is from Germany. She was born in Germany and she did some medical training there. And she said in Germany, all medical professionals start out with the same training, whether they're veterinary or human or whatever, because like you're saying, the basics of health are the same. And then they, you know, they get to a certain point where they, you know, differentiate into their specialties. But I thought that was a very interesting model, just along the lines of what you were just saying. You know, health is health. The principles pretty much the same. Yeah, they tweak them a little bit depending on the species, but pretty much the principles of health along the lines of good nutrition and don't poison the body with unnecessary vaccines, pharmaceuticals, preventatives, all of that. Pretty much the same across the board. It's just not rocket science. Like, why, you know, look at all the stuff that goes back and forth about health in the world and what creates health. And, you know, I think a lot of the mainstream stuff on the human and the veterinary side is about creating disease, because then they make money treating it. If they're really interested in health, it's just pretty dang simple. Good nutrition, fewer toxins in the body. I mean, that's pretty much it. That's health in a nutshell. And then what I do is I spend time undoing what's been done that doesn't follow that. So the poor, you know, quality kibble diets and the over-vaccinating and all the medications, you know, the dogs that have had diarrhea, chronic diarrhea that have been on 9 different courses of metronidazole, you know, we got a lot of undoing to do. But really the principles of health, it's just so blatantly simple in my mind.
Yeah. In my mind too. According to this review that we got, from M's Girl 132, she said, people need to wake up. The people that are mad about the comments about vaccines and COVID need to wake up and admit to themselves that this whole thing has been a lie. If you truly can't see how the push for vaccines and mandates relates to the same push for pharma in the dog world, find another podcast that will placate your already cloudy views.
Ooh, I like that person.
We like her. And then Steph K10 says this, it's a top shelf podcast, one of the best dog podcasts out there. Keep up the good fight. Oh, friends, nice. Don't let friends feed kibble. So we thank you so much for your reviews of the podcast.
And I really appreciate people being willing to listen and open their minds, because you don't have to agree with everything you hear, but maybe you'll learn something. Maybe there's something new out there, or sometimes just saying, no, you know what? I don't know that I can get on board with what you're hearing, but then you go through this thought process and, you know, well, why don't I, and do I have other, you know, evidence to support the contrary point of view. So I think it can be a valuable exercise listening to things that maybe you don't 100% agree with, but maybe, you know, you could open your mind a little bit more, or, learn some different things, learn some new things. I really appreciate people having the willingness to do that.
Well, and the question really is, why don't I agree with that?
Yeah, exactly.
Why does that bother me? Why does that set me off? And I think that we could say the same thing. You know, why don't I agree with doing an iodine supplement? Well, because I do the research behind it. You know, because I'm always going to say, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I am wrong. And then I'll go and I'll consult with you, and I'll consult with Neely. I'll consult with some other people. I'll do research. I'll look in some of the top research books. So I want to make sure that I'm not steering people the wrong way, right? That would be awful. I can't imagine, Dr. Jasek, the feeling that some of these doctors and even vets must have if they have a heart, if they have a consciousness, if they have a moral bone in their body, that they wouldn't feel horrendous guilt if they find out that they have been leading people in the wrong direction just because they didn't want to step outside of the box. They didn't want to be looked at sideways. They didn't want to be ostracized. That must be a horrible, I can't imagine, that must be a horrible feeling.
Well, I'll tell you what, some of these, especially the human practitioners, as more people wake up and realize like what's been going on, they better be running for their lives, because they're going to be, people are going to be pissed. Cause you know, I've heard this, like you got a bunch of mama bears out there and they find out that somebody's been poisoning their babies. Whew, look out, man. They're going to be coming for doctors and the people pushing this, you know, this agenda that they believed was in the best interest of health for them and their kids. And I think there could be a lot of pissed off people out there.
One of the reasons that we do this podcast is because we keep saying the same thing over and over again, because they keep saying the same thing over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. We've got to undo, as you just said, we got to undo some of the information that is so prevalent out there. And some of the information that we need to undo, Dr. Jasek, is the traditional way to address cancer. And you are getting ready to do another Doctor's Rounds with Dogs Naturally magazine in March. We'll announce that again. Mm-hmm. But I think you're one of those vets that has stepped outside of the box and said, look, I'm going to do something different, because what I see in my 30 years of practice isn't pretty. I got to do something different. And you talk about, you have this great article on your website. Actually, it's under cancer care. I want to talk about how you do cancer consultations and what your philosophy is, what your treatment is. When somebody comes in with cancer, does it matter, Dr. Jasek, what kind of cancer it is?
Well, from the perspective, so my perspective in treating cancer revolves around strengthening the natural healing ability of the body to manage the cancer. It's not focused on attacking the cancer, which is what conventional medicine does. Conventional medicine sees a lump. Okay, first of all, we got to make the lump disappear. And they jump in and they do surgery, or usually the first thing is they stick needles in it and do an aspirate, which can sometimes blow up tumors. And they'll do the surgery. Yeah. And when they do, you know, surgery to remove some of these tumors, to get these big wide margins So there's supposedly no cancer cells left in the area. There's a lot of disruption done to that natural circulation, natural, you know, lymphatic drainage in the area. And I think that's why there's a high rate of regrowth. And when we get a tumor that regrows at a surgery site, they grow back with a vengeance. And it is really, really hard to eliminate them once that happens. And even if they get quote unquote clean margins, there's no guarantee that there's not a few cells floating around. And again, you have compromised the local immunity in that area and they grow back. And so to answer your question, it really doesn't. If I see a pet most of the cancer patients I see have had the diagnostics done. They've had a needle aspirate or they've already had surgery and we know what it is. But if somebody comes into me with a lump or their dog has a lump and it's or cat and it's never been checked, I just say, just leave it. Let's focus on the pet and improving the health of the pet. Like we were saying before, good nutrition, stop poisoning the body. Let's get that pet as healthy as we possibly can and support the immune system's ability to manage this and not focus on what type of cancer it is. Because, you know, medicine has become more about following algorithms than actually treating the patient on the conventional side. You know, there's a specific treatment protocol for a specific diagnosis. So if a conventional vet does not have a name to put on something, they don't know how to treat it because they take that diagnosis and plug it into their medical algorithms that they're following, and then they know how to treat it. They don't even have to think anymore. It's really sad. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of the stuff we're seeing in conventional medicine. I just see this huge lack of compassion and lack of empathy. You know, people are just turned, if they don't want to follow the conventional route, they're just turned away. There's no options given to them. Well, because they don't really have other options. If somebody doesn't want to follow the algorithm for this particular diagnosis, then they don't have anything else to offer. But when you look at the pet and you see how's the pet doing? What's their quality of life? You know, what's their appetite like? What are they eating? Of course, we recommend fresh food, ideally raw diets, if the pets can handle those okay. Most of them can just fine. And we start there with the nutrition, and then we stop doing the vaccines and the heartworm prevention and the flea and tick and all of this stuff that is just adding more and more chemicals into the body. And we just support the body's ability to manage the cancer. And we're seeing some pretty good results with this approach.
Let me ask you this. If you took, obviously we know that glucose, right? Sugar, carbohydrates, grains, legumes, fruits, sugars, all those type of things feed the cancer cells. If you take that out, can you actually just starve out cancer? Or is there a point where cancer has progressed so far that even starving out the cancer is not going to do it?
Well, I think there's always going to be a tipping point where cancer has debilitated the body so much that it's hard to come back from that. But those pets usually have already quit eating and they're very weakened. The pets, if I see a cancer patient that's just really weak and they can't get them to eat anything or can't get them to hold down food, like they're chronically vomiting, usually when we have a loss of appetite like that, and I'm not talking about skipping a meal or, you know, the pet's a little bit more particular, you know, like they like certain things more than others. I mean, like they just shut down. They're not eating anything. You can't get them to eat anything. You could feed them filet mignon and they wouldn't touch it. Those types of cases, usually we don't have a really great chance, but if they're eating, I think diet goes a really, really long way, especially in a really, really long way in, like you were saying, starving the cancer cells, especially if we can make it a little more ketogenic, which means bumping up the fat content a little bit. I think the most important thing is eliminating the processed carbohydrates in the food, in the treats, in any supplements, because that's what's really inflammatory to the body. But if you bump up the fat content a little bit, you eliminate the process. You can't just add in fat if you're not eliminating the processed carbohydrates. So you can't add some coconut oil in with your kibble, create the same effect. It isn't going to work. You have to eliminate the processed carbs. But then when you bump up that fat, the body can burn fat as a fuel. And it's in fact a much more efficient fuel than glucose, but cancer cells cannot burn fat. So the lower we can get the blood glucose. And I don't do a lot of like measuring blood glucose and ketones because I just don't think it's that necessary, because dogs will eat what we feed them. And as long as people are on board with feeding a diet that doesn't have the processed carbs in and it's fresh food and maybe a little bit of extra fat, they're going to be on a ketogenic diet. But what feeding that way does is it trains the body to burn fat instead of sugar. And the lower we get the blood glucose, we do in fact start to starve the cancer cells. But I do think that adding in other things for immune system support still have benefits, such as our ozone therapy or mistletoe therapy or things like that, that modulate the immune system, help improve immune system function, are going to help even more, are going to enhance the effects of the diet change. But the diet change is, and I tell people this all the time, is the most important thing. They're going to do one thing, do that. If they don't do the diet change, they're wasting their time doing the other stuff. They have to do that piece. And then we can stack a little bit on top of that to help put the odds in our favor as far as managing the cancer.
I want to touch on fat for a second, because we had a situation where, people bring different products to my attention all the time. And I have a customer who has some Germans, and one was really itching. And this lady loves her Germans and she does a great job, but she had talked with a vet who encouraged her to give this certain fat to her dogs. This was a 22-pound basket. What is it? A 22-pound tub, a 22-pound tub of fat. And it comprised of chicken fat, salmon oil, coconut oil, and then a bunch of other additives in there. And so we said, look, we want to pull that out because that's not really the type of fat that we would suggest. Dr. Jessica, you do not like oils. This was a big tub of oil. Could you explain, when you say fat, what you're talking about versus this type of fat and why that type of fat isn't going to be the best for your dog?
Yeah. So I think fats have gotten a bad reputation because there's a lot of bad fats and unhealthy fats and rancid toxic fats out there. So the very worst are your trans fats, right? Those are completely artificial, your margarines, Crisco, all that. I don't think anybody debates anymore that those things are not good. But the other thing is, the more we process something, and this is across the board, this is why we recommend raw feeding, because it's the least processed way of feeding your pet. Anytime you process something, you're going to lose nutritional value. And oftentimes, and especially in the case of oils, they're not very stable. So even, fish oils, is there benefit to those omega-3s? Yeah, absolutely. But just in the process of taking that oil, processing that oil out of the fish, you're going to lose nutritional value, and it's not very stable. So if it gets exposed to heat or cold, like during the shipping process, those oils could go rancid. And why do that? Why not just feed the fish? Because then you're going to get the benefit of another protein. You're going to get all the nutrients that are in the fish along with those omega-3s. So feeding the whole food is way better than just adding in the extra oil. When I add in extra fat, so the saturated fats are the ones that have gotten a really bad reputation for causing heart disease and all this stuff. In dogs, you hear about pancreatitis. I don't think fat well-sourced fat ever causes pancreatitis if the dogs have healthy digestion. So your saturated fats are the fats that are stable or solid at room temperature. So things like your beef tallow and pork lard and things like that are solid fats and saturated. What that actually means is the fat molecule has all its little, like if, you know, maybe that had chemistry, you know, you look at the molecular structure of something and you'll have all these little atoms. You'll have your carbons and your hydrogens and your oxygens, and you got all these little letters with little, you know, sticks connecting them together. Saturated fat has no open areas on those molecules. The polyunsaturated or monounsaturated. So monounsaturated would be like olive oil is a monounsaturated. Polyunsaturated fats are your canola oils, corn oils, soybean oils. They are very unstable because they have lots of little spots in that molecule that are not taken up by one of these atoms. So anything can jump in there. And so these molecules can be changed very quickly. And these oils that you see in the grocery store in clear bottles, these oils are sensitive to heat and cold and light. So they're sitting there under the fluorescent lights in the grocery store. But the saturated fats, they're very stable. They are they're heat tolerant. So they're great for cooking, cooking in your, you know, for your human food. Saturated fats are very, very stable and you can heat them up to like 400 degrees and they're not going to break down because the molecule is so stable. Your other oils, you know, that like you go to eat out, and especially if you eat fried food and whatever cheap oil they're using to fry your French fries or tater tots or whatever you might be eating, those oils are probably toxic to begin with because they're these polyunsaturated, and then they're using these high fryer temperatures. My God, that's just, you know, you're just poisoning yourself with that stuff.
There's a lot of stuff on the market, Dr. JC, that's just crap. I'm telling you, I see it every day.
I had a new client in yesterday that said that his dog is on the absolute very best kibble out there. Mm.
What was that? I don't know what that is.
I can't even remember the name because you know what the answer is to that. We pull up the ingredients and I'm like, okay, this kibble, it's still 50% carbohydrate. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's grains or the beans, peas, lentils, all that stuff. It's all a whole bunch of processed carbs. It doesn't matter what the marketing says. So you're going to pay a whole lot more for a bag of kibble that isn't any better than the cheap bags, really, because all those carbs break down into sugar in the bloodstream anyway. So I burst a lot of people's bubbles when I tell them, you know, stuff like that. Like there is no, I just tell them my opinion, there is no such thing as a good kibble. They're all pretty much garbage.
Friends don't let friends feed kibble, and neither do good vets.
That's right. That's right.
So let me ask you this. How many diseases do you believe are affected and caused by an autoimmune issue?
I think there's a lot, probably a lot more than gets recognized. So things like diabetes, you know, thyroid. I think a lot of low thyroid levels are autoimmune because the immune system is attacking the thyroid gland. Any kind of skin issue could be at least in part autoimmune. The immune system, the body's inflamed, the immune system is going after the skin cells. And then there's the real like blatant ones, like your pemphigus where the nose and eyes get all real crusty. Mm-hmm. That's true autoimmune. Gingivitis. I think there's a lot of dental disease is autoimmune in nature, especially in cats. I've seen this a lot in cats where the gums will be inflamed just right around the teeth, and these cats end up needing all their teeth pulled ultimately because their mouths just stay so inflamed. And once all the teeth are gone, the mouth is fine. They obviously don't have teeth, but as long as you're eating a soft food diet, they're fine. But I mean, what else could that be? You know, the body's reacting to the teeth. As soon as the teeth are gone, then all of that inflammation goes away. So I think pretty much, I mean, any inflammatory condition, I think, can have an autoimmune component because there's a disruption in normal immune system function. And that's why a lot of the things that I do therapeutically, I call them immunomodulating. So we are supporting the immune system, but we're not overstimulating it. We're not amping it up, especially if we might have autoimmune. We don't want an overactive immune system. What we need to do is re-educate the immune system so it knows what's friend and foe. It shouldn't be attacking the cells in the body, obviously, but it needs to attack things that we want it to attack, like bacteria, viruses, mutated cells, abnormal cells, like cancer cells. The immune system should be eliminating these. So that's where we have to get the immune system re-educated. And I think the absolute biggest disruptor of immune function in pets are the darn vaccines. Then they get them over and over and over and over again. And it's just, it's a big selling game. It's a big fear game. It's a big propaganda game. And I think probably overall, pets are way healthier the fewer vaccines they get.
You know, I would love to see a research study that looked at, all right, if an animal's body had never, ever had anything injected into it, okay, going through the veins, nothing injected into it, like a vaccine, would there be autoimmune issues in pets that had never had anything injected to them?
I mean, I think the chances would go down way, 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 way down.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, what is it other than that causes autoimmune? Do we just have people walking down the street, dogs walking down the street, living their lives with autoimmune for no reason? And this is what I think the disconnect is. It's just as if we think they have this cancer, they have this autoimmune disease, we have autoimmune disease, we have cancer for no reason. No, there is a path to that. There's a path to that. I mean, does the immune system just, you just pop out of mama's, you know, Joey pocket and say, I have autoimmune disease?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think something has to disrupt it because the body knows how to stay in balance, and the body has amazing like checks and balances. Like, you know, say the immune system does react to something, there's a, you know, bacteria it's exposed to, or say there's some toxicity and the immune system is eliminating, you know, damaged cells or something like that, it'll kick it into gear. It knows what to do. But then when the problem's done, everything quiets back down and it goes back to the more quiescent state. So the body knows how to balance. There's mechanisms in place for that to happen. And I don't think it gets out of balance on its own. It has help from us humans, sadly.
That's a good way of putting it. It doesn't get out of balance on its own. So early cancer detection. So a lot of people would like to be able to know if they're on the right track with their animals. You have a early cancer detection program. Talk to us about that. Tell us how we can make sure that we're on the right path.
Well, that is mostly about looking for inflammatory markers. So there are some blood tests that can test for some indicators of inflammation in the body. So if you're going to have cancer develop, you're going to have inflammation first. Inflammation's just the base of all disease. And this goes back to this disruption in the immune system. So what is inflammation? Inflammation is where the immune system is in overdrive too much of the time. And the body's inflamed, the immune system is constantly reacting, which sort of puts the body more into the sympathetic mode or the fight or flight mode, because the body's always fighting something. The body can't ever just completely rest and relax and heal, because it's chronically inflamed. So you can, there's a few inflammatory markers that you can measure. One is the CRP, the C-reactive protein. Another one is thymidine kinase. And another thing that's been linked to cancer is low vitamin D levels. And so there's a lab that I use, it's VDI Labs, and they run a test that you can test for those three, the thymidine kinase and the C-reactive protein and the vitamin D. And that they have like a little algorithm they've sort of put together that's an index of inflammation in the pet's body. And subsequently, then they assess cancer risk. So if somebody came to me and said, look, I got a young dog, they seem pretty healthy, want to make sure I'm doing everything right, then that would be something we could check. Now, if somebody comes to me and they're feeding kibble and they're vaccinating and they're on, you know, different types of medications or supplements, I would probably say eliminate those things before we do that test, because that all those things, you know, could be the problem. You know, those are the things. And then you can do the test as kind of a monitoring thing. Well, you know, how are we doing? Is there still signs of inflammation? Maybe there's other things we need to do to reduce inflammation in the pet's body. And sometimes we can do, you know, some supportive thing with some herbs or, you know, some supplements. But yeah, in terms of, and then I think just doing general blood work is a good idea too. How are the kidneys doing? And there's lots of things that we can do. So yeah, there are definitely some, you know, some screening tests we can do, or again, at the very least, good nutrition and stop poisoning the body. If you don't, you know, want to put the money into the tests, just do those things. And you're going to be, you know, well on the way to keeping your pet healthy.
Right. So very simple, feed them a species appropriate clean diet, stop poisoning the body, and get these tests. And then you can do some tweaking. Now, if you're going to do these cancer detection test, would you say you could do them every year, every 3 years? What would be your recommendation? Once we put all these other things into place, what would be your recommendation just as an overall health program for these detections?
Yeah, I would say if we do the test and they're normal, then I would say once a year, probably fine, as long as nothing changes in the pet's routine. If the pet gets sick, you know, has to go in for surgery, gets injured, something like that, you might want to repeat it sooner just to make sure that, you know, there aren't, you know, the medications didn't inflame the body excessively or anything like that. If we see elevations, I would probably make some changes and then maybe check them again in about 3 months until we see the values coming down. And then once we get them normal and the pet outwardly seems healthy, I mean, people, you know, your pet, you know, I think it's important to not ignore things like, gee, my pet all of a sudden, you know, doesn't seem to want to jump in the car, or used to love to go for walks and now just isn't so crazy about it. Don't ignore those things. Let's check, you know, and see, is there something that's going on that's causing that change in behavior? So you want to stay on top. So that would be a sign, oh, maybe we should revisit some of these lab tests and see if anything is changing in the body. If the pet is eating good, has good poops and good energy and a happy dog, then, you know, once a year is probably fine.
So if you would like to get your dog on the road to health and longevity, the first thing you want to do is just dump the kibble. Dump the kibble, dump the processed food, titer your dogs. That is, check in antibody levels. You have the right to say yes or no. Don't forget that. We must express this over and over again. You still have the right in this country to say yes or no. Are there consequences? Can be. You still have the right to say yes or no.
You know, above all, do no harm. That's what I look at. Like if I'm going to do something, I'm going to make sure first and foremost, it is not going to harm the pet. Whereas that just gets completely overlooked in conventional medicine, these horrific prescription diets, things like, you know, in the cancer realm, the chemo and the radiation, those things do tons of harm, and they don't do anything to help support the body through that process. They don't talk about nutrition. I hear that all the time. You know, people will say, they ask their veterinary oncologist, does nutrition matter? Oh no, they're just, no, just eat whatever. Nutrition isn't going to make any difference. I was like, what? Like, how can it not make a difference? That doesn't even make any logical sense, that what you're putting in the pet's body nutritionally isn't going to have an impact on its health. But they just say no. They're just laser focused on their particular treatments. And as long as they can make a tumor go away, so say they do surgery and they do chemo and they do radiation, and that tumor stays gone for a couple months, that they've considered that a success because they made the tumor go away. It doesn't matter if you know, in 5 months, the tumor grows back, or the pet is chronically ill now because of the chemo. It doesn't matter. It's still considered a success. So be really careful about, you know, the statistics that are quoted to you. If you do go into an oncologist, they say, yeah, you know, this treatment has, you know, 85% efficacy or something. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that this tumor is going to go away and my pet is going to live for 2 months with a terrible quality of life? Well, I can tell you, using more natural means, in most cases, pets will go way beyond what the conventional predictions are as far as longevity and have a way better quality of life. And for me, if I had a sick pet, I would want it to have the best quality of life possible for as long as possible. So I would not be poisoning its body. You know, sometimes, yeah, sure, you need to do things like pain medications. We want to keep them comfortable as long as they're tolerating the medications. Okay. We want to keep them comfortable. So we're going to do things that are going to help improve the pet's quality of life. But that to me is the most important thing. That's my biggest gauge. Set aside lab results, biopsies, cancer grades, or anything. I look at the pet. How's the pet doing? Is it happy? Is it going for walks? Is it eating? Is it jumping up and down when their people come home? Those are the things that are the biggest indicators of health, in my opinion. If you're going to do nothing else, do the diet, because that's the most important thing you'll ever do. And then we can talk about, okay, how can we work some other things in?
If you want to start these early cancer detection tests, I love that. I love that because it helps you know where you need to tweak, what you need to do, and you know that you're doing the best you can do. All right. So get over to ahavet.com, read Dr. Jasek's articles on cancer, on nutrition, and then come over to rawdogfoodandco.com, rawdogfoodandcompany.com, doesn't matter which one you put in. We can ship the raw dog food anywhere you want. We will help you put together an order if that's what you need. We ship every Monday. But here at Raw Dog Food and Company, just remember, your pet's health is our business, and friends don't let friends feed kibble. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.